I thought we had some very outstanding sermons during the Feast of Tabernacles at Branson, and hopefully at all the other feast sites too, if some of you attended various places. But we heard that the conditions that when the new King of Kings returns, to rule the whole world, there's going to be a whole different set of circumstances. Now, that theme seemed to go through about everything that was spoken at the Feast of Tabernacles, and I thought that was great. Well, but you see, originally, the way it was, Adam and Eve sinned. They were the original directors of the world at that time, right at the beginning. You might look at that in Genesis, the first chapter, Genesis chapter 1, and verse 27. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 27, when God created them, it says, "So God created man in his image, in the image of God he created them, male and female he created them." Now he tells us how in the second chapter, but that's not my subject here. "Then God blessed them, and God said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea.'" Well, that just about includes everything. You have dominion even over the fish of the sea, "and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." Now, that was what Adam and Eve were to have originally as God created them. And God said, "See, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is in the face of the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, for you it shall be food, and to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food." So you see, there were no cannibalistic or animals at that time. They were all to eat vegetation, which they will again after Christ returns. You know, the lamb and the lion will I don't know, that's not my subject, but I just thought I'd mention that here. That originally, every green herb was for the food of the animals, all of the animals of the earth at that time also. Adam and Eve were to be the rulers of the earth. What happened? They sinned. They disobeyed God. And when they disobeyed God, terrible thing happened. You and I live in that world that actually became the world ruled over by Satan the devil. Now, that happened when Adam and Eve, when Satan gained the right by taking over for Adam and Eve, actually tricking them into obeying him. And so he got the rulership, or the right to rulership, over the whole world. And we know that that's the way it is. He rules the world in which you and I live. Now, we realize that. I could turn to just the third chapter right here and read the first couple of verses. You see, the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field, which the eternal God had made. And he said to the woman, now snakes don't go around talking normally, you see, or serpents, but this was a special one. And this was Satan the devil speaking through this serpent. And has God indeed said that you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? It's interesting that he would ask that kind of a question, because they were told they could eat of all of the trees of the garden except that one tree. And so he would ask it this way, wouldn't he? Because Satan knew that, obviously. And in the process of tricking Eve into eating of that tree that was forbidden, that the woman said to the serpent, verse 2, "We may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, and of the fruit of the trees which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it. She knew God's command. Adam obviously knew God's command not to eat of that tree. He made it clear there. Nor shall you touch it, lest you die, it says. Now, verse 4. Then the serpent said to the woman, you'll not surely die. You won't die. Well, she did, didn't she? And so is everybody else down the line, and you and I will too eventually in this from this physical life. Hebrews 9:27 says it's given for man once to die. And as a result of this, it's given for man once to die. I've had many times in visiting with people have asked me, what would have happened if they had not eaten of that? I said, well, the answer is simple. You didn't have to die to be born, did you? You see, they would have eaten, if they had eaten of the tree of life, they would have received the seed of real life, God life, spirit life, if you please, and could have grown and developed and be born spirit beings. Now, it didn't go that way, but the answer to that seems simple to me. Now, if I miss it by any degree in any way, why, you see, they weren't supposed to die. No more than you and I were supposed to die when we were born. But God created a new way for them to be born after all of this. So I don't need to go into all of that, I don't think. But I wanted to point out the fact that out of all of this, Satan became the ruler of this world in which you and I live. Now we know and realize that that actually happened. And the world that you and I were born into is ruled then by the master deceiver of all. We were schooled under Satan's rulership. Every single one of after Adam, and there were many, many, many of them, even Adam's own children, which were what? 23 sons and 34 sons, I believe, and 23 daughters or something like that, according to Josephus, according to the tradition that Josephus talked about. You know there must have been very many of them because there were other sons and daughters, the Bible says that, clearly born to Adam and Eve. That's not my subject. Anyway, all were schooled under Satan's world. Satan, the god of this world. Every single one of us. Well, that is a certain way of thinking, then, that we were born right into. We never knew any different. And that isn't what we heard at the Feast of Tabernacles, the way the millennium is going to be. The way the time when Christ returns as King of Kings and over the rulership of the world is not going to be like that. Well, what's the difference? I want to talk about that a bit today, that difference. I think that would be following up right along with what was taught at the Feast of Tabernacles. Satan the devil actually had his own basic way that he developed. Now, he wasn't created that way. I want to turn to Ezekiel 28 first. Ezekiel 28 and verse 12. And we'll see how he was created. Ezekiel 28 and verse 12. God created him originally. There's no doubt about that. Because he created everything, and without him was not anything created that was created. Ezekiel 12 and verse 12, Ezekiel 28 and verse 12, I said 12, Ezekiel 12. Ezekiel 28, maybe you'll get it eventually, and verse 12, where it says, and I quote, you were, let's see, I could read the first part of, the last part of verse 11, where it says, you were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Now it says, verse 11, that was the king of Tyre. Well, the king of Tyre wasn't in Eden, the garden of God. Obviously, this being was the one that was Lucifer, or Haleel, as you will find in Strong's if you heard it hunted up. But every precious stone was your covering. Then it names the sardis and the topaz and the diamond and the beryl and the onyx and jasper, sapphire, turquoise, I can't even say the word, and emerald and gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day that you were created. You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones. Beautiful creature God created as a spirit being. Of course, we can't see spirit beings, so we can't see the beauty, but he was a beautiful, beautiful being in his realm, in his living realm, as one of apparently one of the three cherubs, the covering cherubs. Now, there are only two covering cherubs remaining because he was removed. But verse 15 says, you were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created. What happened? Well, he had the capability to think for himself to some extent. I said he. I shouldn't say he because he's not a he or a she at all. See, the angels are not sexed. And they're not, you know, it's just like saying that that ship lying out there, boy, she's a beauty lying out there in the harbor. That has just about the same amount of sex as Satan does. You see, that no sex at all, obviously. But we use the term he all the time, which likes to see aggrandized, naturally. But you were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created till iniquity was found in you. Wasn't found right away until it got to where it was finally recognized that he was evil. By the abundance of your trading, you became filled with violence. What is that sort of thing? By the abundance of your training. Well, how does training shops or training stores or however you want to, trading stores where you buy merchandise or and by the abundance of your trading, you are filled with violence within. Obviously, he was misrepresenting the trading somehow, and it was all wrong. And it was recognized. And God recognized that. You became filled with violence within, and you sinned. Now, they talk about the original sin, you know. Well, here it is, really. Not Adam and Eve. That wasn't the original sin. Here's the original sin of Satan the devil. Therefore, I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God, and I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the fiery stones. I don't need to read any more of that. I want to turn to Isaiah, the 14th chapter. Isaiah, the 14th chapter, and see a little bit more about this being and how, well, what his motivation, that's the point I want to make about here. What was his very motivation? How did we become trained into all of that? Because he's the tutor of it all, you might say, the ruler of the world. And so we grew up in all of that. Isaiah 14, and what verses do I want here? Verse 12. It says, how are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? If you look that word up in Strong's, you'll find, I even had the number here somewhere, I've forgotten what it is, but you'll find that his name was also Leal. L-E-Y-L-E-L. O Lucifer, son of the morning, how you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. By his teaching and rulership, he weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into the heavens. I'll exalt my throne above the sons of God, and I'll also sit on the mount of the congregation in the farthest side of the north. That's where God's throne is, and mentioned in other places on sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, and I will be like the Most High. Even he knew that you couldn't get any higher than that level, even if it's on an even keel. So he wanted to be... It's interesting that I have an interlinear, a Hebrew interlinear, and it takes that number, and Strong's gives that number, and it translates it likeness, in the likeness of God. And I think the Revised Standard makes it even a little plainer. I don't have it with me. I didn't bring it, but it says to be made like unto God or something of that. That was what the Revised Standard says. He was going to be like God in capability then. That was his basic motive. Totally wrong. Want to climb the ladder of success. That's the whole world we live in. Almost everything is that way in this world. Do better than the other guy. Beat the other person. Cheat the other person. Do anything to get ahead. You know, that's the way the world is that we live in. Satan's rulership. It's always that way. It seems that it has to be just that way. Let's see. I did write it down here. The Revised Standard Version says, I will make myself like the Most High. That's a direct quote from this passage in Isaiah 12. In the Revised Standard Version. Let's see. Competing to take God's place. That was Satan's motivation. I just read it to you, how that he was going to make himself up there equal to God. He was going to take that quality of level of living, which he didn't have, of course, and he was going to take God's place, and of course that would be like your dog saying that he's going to take your place. As far as a comparison of an animal to a human being is somewhat comparable to angels to God. Now, I've had enough experience with angelic beings, and I can assure you I have in times gone by after working so many, many, many years out in that dry area in California, demons all over the place out there, stuff that I never ever want to tell anybody that I've had to experience out there because of all of those demons, spirits. But that one thing that I learned, that in all probability, obviously I haven't experienced a spirit to the place where I can say it dogmatically, but I did experience the fact that angels can be somewhat compared to, when compared to God, can be comparable to man compared to animals, because they're animated beings, and God made angels. You see, Mr. Armstrong preached for many, many years. I've heard it over and over and over again. Even God couldn't create something equal to himself by fiat or by direct act. It had to be a process. So God built that process so that actually mankind can become born children of God, literally. And that is the beauty of the process that God created. It's a marvelous thing when we see it in that light. Now, the reason I mention all of this is because that one system that you and I grew up with, we hardly ever think of the opposite of that. But the opposite of that is all going to be in the millennium, in the world tomorrow. See, all of that competitive system, that whole competing system, is all going to be changed in the world tomorrow. Now, we heard about that in sermons, but I wanted to talk about the element that actually brings that all about in our language, in our simple language, and the language is simple that simply could say competition. Competition. We grew up with it. We were born into it from the day we were born. There's even competition in families many times. But there certainly is competition as soon as you start to school. You want to do better than the next guy. You got to compete with them and have better grades, you see. That's the way it is. That's the system. And that's Satan's world. Now, I think that's about as fundamental as I can get with the level of children being taught. But we were taught all of that. We ever think of any other way? No, that was natural. Just as natural as could be. The world around us even calls competition, I think I've put that down somewhere. Today competition is talked about what the word that they use almost everywhere is, it's healthy competition. Boy, if that isn't an immediate contradiction of terms, I never heard one. Healthy competition. Healthy competition then always has winners and losers. You never talk about the losers. You always cheer for the winners. But you see, somebody is hurt by all of that all the time, and God isn't going to have hurts in his kingdom. But that's the way Satan's world is. And so we grew up in it. We call it healthy competition. It's just a misconception as far as the term is concerned itself. Competing for God's place was what was the horrible iniquity of Satan, the devil, the sin in the first place. Competition is the very thing that I want to mention here. It's what all mankind learns from birth, and it's difficult for anyone to think even any other way. Think about it. It's difficult for us to think any other way. We live in it all the time, compete with it ourselves. I did. For 35 years, I struggled in this world before God ever called me out. And I went through that very process. I thought it was all okay. Healthy competition? No. You see, God's Saint Kingdom is not going to be like that. Now, God called me out of it, and I'll tell you, it was a little difficult for me to come out of all of that, too, as far as that goes. When I say that, I decided to... I was a supervising engineer at the time that God called me out to ordain me as a local elder, and they don't pay local elders like they pay supervising engineers, I'll guarantee you of that, but money wasn't the object, and I didn't come into God's truth for the sake of money, but I didn't leave everything either. You see, when we come away in God's truth, we still have a lot of that hanging on to us. And we don't think about God's way from the beginning, let's face it. And so I had all kinds of things to overcome along the way, and so do all of us. That's the way it is. It's a system that we live in to grow. Problems are for the very purpose of our growing to become more like God, so that we can face a whole different system when it finally comes. That's what we need to know and recognize. As I said, when we start to school, we compete to get higher grades all the time. Well, I was too ornery to do all of that, I guess, as far as that goes. But God gave me the capability to come out on top even then, as far as that goes, even though I didn't have to study. Shame on me. I should have. I should have been pounded into it. But I didn't. I wasn't. But anyhow, the system is there. And I always wanted to get higher grades, too. So I was right along with it. That's the way it is. We start off that way. it's a win or lose process. That's the whole point. And that system, then, we don't see any other way. We grow up with it, common, human nature, ordinary. We call it all of those terms, and it's just as natural as living in this world in which we live, which is all Satan's world. That whole system is always bad for the loser. Think about it. It's always bad for the loser. We cheer for the winner. Forget the loser. Forget all about them. You see, they're going around as a loss in all of it. It's too bad. In God's kingdom, there won't be any losers. That's the marvelous part of it all. But you see, in Satan's world, there are always losers in everything, you might say. You can think of it in terms of the political realm. Well, we got a presidential vote. And someone's going to win, someone's going to lose. You always think about the loser? No, nobody thinks about that. They cheer for the winner. It's the way it always is in Satan's world. And that's the way Satan wants it, of course. He wants mankind never to be able to become equal with God, so he wants to destroy them. And to a great extent, he's getting the job done, and they will win, but that's not the end of the story. And we learned that also at the last great day, that that's not the end of the story as far as God is concerned. It'll be the end of Satan as far as his capability is concerned. He'll be cast as far as we are know anyway. It's the best of our understanding of the scriptures. Jude 13 says he'll be cast to outer darkness forever. Gone. Away. Outer darkness, outside of the reach of the whole universe, or universes, however many there may be, outside of all of that. We don't know anything about what space is out there and how much room our universe takes up and what's outside of it. But Satan will be cast to outer darkness, gone. Now all of his beauty won't be shining in all of its glory if it's total darkness. And you can think about that too. That's his fate, apparently, as far as we know. However, I'm ahead of the story. Competition is the wrong direction. We should know and realize that competition is the opposite of what is going to happen when Christ returns. He's going to eliminate that. Now, the elimination, I already talked about that in terms of all the horror that's going to happen in the deaths of people very, very rapidly after Christ returns, and there will be a seven-month period of funeral, burying all of the dead. Most of that because they never ever heard of any other way of life, and so they're going to compete against Christ right off the bat. Now, that's a pretty bad fight, as I pointed out in a sermon here, about the last sermon I gave or so, about the horror that's going to come upon this world. You see, but the system, all the way from birth, we've never learned any other way. There's got to be winners and losers. In business, one side always wants to outdo the other. One store wants to do more sales than the other store. Competition is always there. In business, in every capacity almost, there's competition. It's natural. We live in it. Don't think about that in terms of competition. But that's the way it is. That's the way it will be. And there's no getting around it. In arts and scientists, think about it. You always have to have the good painters. Well, how about the others? Some of them may do some painting that is, in certain ways, if you could evaluate all of the ways, could be better than the great ones. But you got to step ahead. You always got to compete and be ahead of the rest. And arts and sciences. Now, I grew up to study science, and I know, because I was in it. Now, I wasn't necessarily stepping on other people to try to get ahead, but it was still competition. There were people trying to get my job. There's no doubt about that. And I had to be on guard about that all the time. And as I said, I wasn't just living for the purpose of trying to step on somebody else and crush them. In fact, the matter is, I tried to teach my people that if I called all my people in when I became the supervising engineer over a section of the power company in California, I called all my men in and I said, look, the reason that I'm the supervisor here of this is because I've got the education. Not only that, but I've got the experience for this particular job. And I said, and I told them right then and there, I said, if any of you could run this place better than I can, I'll be happy to work for you. I had pretty good cooperation from my men because they knew I meant it. I went right out with them and showed them when I did. And so I had pretty good cooperation. But it was still a matter of competition, wasn't it? It's a system of competition. We never ever think of it that way. But that's the way it is. And in virtually everything in our whole life, it's all under Satan's rulership, is competition. And we live in it and scarcely, if ever, think of a better way. Well, what is a better way? Well, you know God's kingdom is going to be a better way. There's absolutely no question about that. A better way? Godly cooperation. Not competition, but godly cooperation. That's the other way. That's the better way. Everybody will be helping the other party in every... Now, that's cooperation. When you can come together... Not saying, I know more about this than you do. Hogwaller. No, maybe you know lots of facets of even that very thing better than I do. For many, many years, as a minister, even in worldwide, I would go out and visit with people. And, you know, a minister that goes out there and visits with them and they ask you fundamental questions, you're supposed to just give them an answer, point blank. No, we were taught that way, and that's in a competitive system, too, if you think about it. I would go out, and somebody would ask me a question in their very trade of business, and I said, what do you think? And it would dumbfound them. Dumbfound them! You're the minister, you're supposed to tell me. No, you know more about this business than I do. Now, if there's something wrong with it in terms of God's law, then I'll intervene and tell you about that. But as far as the business is concerned, your business, you know better, much better how to run that than I do. Well, I'm not going to tell you then every nuance about your own business. Just can't do that. My purpose is to teach God's law, God's ways, and to help in that respect. That's cooperation rather than competition. Competition we live in, and we've lived in it so much that we don't ever know any other way. Just as far as we are concerned, there is no other way. So that better way that is that we're to train to get into is a system of cooperation. I thought it would be good just to follow up a sermon follow up on competition versus cooperation from all of that we heard in the Feast of Tabernacles, which I thought was so tremendous. You see, we heard all about the conduct that we're to have in the in the millennial period under Christ's rulership, but I wanted to simplify it in terms of where we are in this wretched system compared to what it'll be like. It'll be a system of cooperation rather than competition. And, well, we've heard a lot about that changeover at the Feast of Tabernacles. And when Jesus Christ returns, though, there will be no such thing as competition. won't have to compete with one another. God says that your job will fit you so well. Well, let's read that verse. I love that verse. I don't have it in my notes, but Revelation, the 21st chapter. In God's kingdom, when it's finally set up altogether, here's the way it'll be. Verse 4, Revelation 21, verse 4. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there will be no more pain. Godspeed that day. You know, when you get older, you have pains. And I've got a hip that gives me pain. Now, God has blessed me with tremendous health, for which I can never thank Him enough. But it doesn't mean I don't have pain. We certainly have pains. But God says He'll wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there will be no more pain nor sorrow. No sorrow? Nobody's going to be clamoring for somebody else's job and be sorry they didn't get it, because there won't be any sorrow. Nor crying. There won't be any reason for crying. There will be no more pain, and the former things have passed away. That's the way God's kingdom is going to be. Absolute perfection. Your job will fit you so perfectly that there will not even be a pain or a sorrow about it in any way, shape, or form. Now, it doesn't mean you can't learn from someone else or cooperate with them and together make a better product. That's the way it ought to be. I've often said, what kind of an automobile would be built if every one of the automakers got together with all of their very best technology and put it into an automobile? Well, I think it would be better than what we have on the road commonly, but we had a question about that one time in Spokesman's Club way back years ago, and a topic came up and it said, what kind of brakes do you think the cars will have in the world tomorrow? And we got all kinds of comments about that from the various ones, and when I got up to evaluate that one, I said, boy, I would love to be in charge of the automobile industry in the world tomorrow. First thing I'd do is go up there and tell them, throw all the rules away. In God's system, it must get better and better and better as it goes on. Now, you show me an automobile that'll do that. No. You see, that's God's way. If man kept his clammy hands off of things, why, and leave God's nature alone, everything gets better and better and better as time goes on. You know, a tree grows up and it grows up and it has leaves, and the leaves fall off and the ground is richer as a result of the leaves all around it. Of course, man comes along and cuts down the tree, but leave it alone. If man didn't intervene, well, it has seeds and the seeds will grow and the whole area will get richer and richer and richer. That's God's way. Now, I said, if you're going to talk about automobiles, unless you talk about that kind of a transportation system, forget it. I don't want to talk about this matter of everything going to pieces after you drive it out the door. That's the way our automobiles are. I don't know why I had to bring that up, but I just thought I'd mention it. See, there is a much better way. The cooperation, God's way. We are out to learn that. That's our purpose for living, really, when you get down to it, is to learn how to do it God's way. And that is a system of cooperation. We have to learn that in order to be able to teach others how to do that in the world tomorrow. Because we heard at the feast that we will be teachers, teaching people that don't know how to do these things. Not for competition, but for cooperation. Teach people how to live that they've never known how to live. They've never known how to grow decent crops. And they've never known how to run economics in a sensible way at all. Many of them. 10,000 starving to death every day in India, tells us. I take their word for it. I don't know. but I thank God I've never been there. But that's what the statisticians tell us. Statisticians, I would use the right word, I guess. But I want to turn to an example of how it ought to be done. John, the 13th chapter. Turn there with me. John 13. Let's see how the master that's going to return to take over things, how he did this matter of competition. The 13th chapter of John, and start in verse 3. It says, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. And after that, he poured water into a basin and began washing the disciples' feet. Now that washing of the disciples' feet in his day, in that historic day, that was about the lowest of the slaves' jobs. The lowest of the slaves were the ones that to wash the guests' feet when they come in. They didn't have paved sidewalks like we have in all of our cities in general. They had dusty roads, and their feet were dusty when they came in, and so they washed their feet as a common thing to come in, and that was the job of the commonest of all of the slaves. And Jesus assumed that very job. Took about the lowest job that was available to anybody in his day. Now, let's see. After he poured water into the basin, he began to wash the disciples' feet, verse 5 says, and to wipe them with a towel with which he was girded. And then he came to Simon Peter. Now, Simon Peter wasn't converted yet at this stage, now remember. He didn't have God's Holy Spirit as yet. But he said to him, Lord, are you washing my feet? You're going to take the position of the lowest of all of the slaves and wash my feet? Boy, he wasn't going to put up with that at all. And Jesus said to him, what I am doing, you do not understand now, but you will know after this. And he had to learn it rather the hard way, of course. And he did learn it later, but at that time, and he said to him, well, you'll never wash my feet, verse 8 says. The Apostle Peter wasn't the apostle yet, but Peter said, you'd never wash my feet. And Jesus said to him, if I do not wash your feet, you have no part with me. And you're not going to become like that. Isn't that about what I'm saying? You won't match that capability of going to the lowest level if that's what is required of you. And Simon Peter said to him, well, Lord, not my feet only, but my hands and my head and everything. See, he washed me all over then. And Jesus said, no, he that is bathed needs not to wash, but his feet. And for he is completely clean, and you are clean, but not all of you. Now, he knew who it was that wasn't going to be clean. So I'll go to verse 12. So when he had washed their feet, taken his garment, and sat down again, said to them, you know what I have done to you? I've taught you the difference between competition and cooperation, if you really want to get it. That's a tremendous lesson if you catch it. It says, you call me teacher and Lord. Did anybody ever doubt that he was the teacher? No. Nobody was going to out-teach him. He was God's very son in the flesh. And nobody out-teached him. They all knew he was the teacher. You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. Now, he was. He didn't deny that. That wasn't even the lesson. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you need to become like that also if you're going to ever be qualified or really be in my kingdom. Now, we do this, you know that, at Passover all of the time. we wash one another's feet, and here's the command that we do it, Jesus' own very in red letters. You ought to wash one another's feet. Now, he says, for I have given you an example that you should do as I have done. And that is no competition. They weren't competing for that job. Nobody wanted to compete for that job. That was the lowest of them all. And he taught that lesson. For I've given you an example that you should do as I have done. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant or a slave, a doulos, is not greater than his master. Well, we ought to understand that, or that the word go. You see, I've climbed over you and got a better position than you. No way. He took the lowest of the positions to show them. He took the lowest of the position. The servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. That's absolutely awesome, brethren. If you're to become God's child, he says, you'll be right like I am. I won't be competing with you in one way or another. Won't have to. I'm your teacher, sure. I can still teach you, of course. Because he knew he'd been there for all eternity. But there's no competition. It'll be eliminated. Think about that. If you know these things, then blessed are you if you do them. We need to do them. That's our very purpose for living, is to grow to become like Jesus Christ exemplified in washing their feet. I could turn to all kinds of examples in his life, but I just wanted to turn to that one. I think that's enough to tell you the difference in the systems. He set an example of willfully taking the lowest position. He certainly made his point. Well, I hope that I have conveyed that point to you, at least to some extent. That's my purpose here after the feast, after the Feast of Tabernacles and the various fantastic sermons that we had at the feast. I thought they were tremendous. We are in the learning process now to ultimately become just like that.